So I want to talk a little bit more about that also, because you have sort of created a fire within the internet world with a story that you put up on breakfornews.com called CIA Internet Fakes. And can you sort of describe the background behind this story and maybe the criteria which you used in naming some of these internet sites that do they issue propaganda, and it's a hidden propaganda, but it's there.
Yeah, sure. Well, it came out of our hands-on involvement in investigating the 9/11 issue because myself and Kathy McMahon, my partner and co-researcher, published an article 7 days after 9/11 spotlighting the fact that most of the fuel load in the second plane had missed the tower. In other words, it had exploded outside in midair, and yet, curiously, that was the tower that fell first. We followed that up with another article 14 days later, which examined the fact that the World Trade Center had changed hands in a huge financial deal just 7 weeks before it had fallen. For the first time in its history, it had been purchased by an Australian corporation from the Port Authority of New York. And we also spotlighted some other individuals involved. So we were in there on the 9/11 story from very early on. And we did actually stop working on the story. We became aware that there was an intelligence interest in us from the moment we began publishing. And so we...
You noticed that from the visitors that were coming, or...
Sorry?
You noticed that from the visitors that were coming, or coming to your site? You could see
that... I wouldn't actually like to specify exactly how we became aware of the intelligence service's interest in what we were at, but we were aware of it early on. And so we stopped publishing on the internet for a while. We did a lot of thinking, and then we came back to examine the issue, and we participated in the ongoing debate on 9/11 issues, but with our eyes wide open as to what might be intelligence agency deceptions, which were designed to cover the tracks of the real perpetrators of 9/11. And keeping our eyes very wide open, over a period of the last 3 years, we've painstakingly put the jigsaw together who we feel we can trust and who we feel is either intentionally or unintentionally operating largely to the agenda of the CIA. And that's our list of CIA internet fakes. And so we're saying that there has been a determined effort to deal with the 9/11 issue, and it goes back quite a way before 9/11.
And who's behind it, you think? Is this CIA, or is this just overall we're talking about a global thing?
Well, you're talking about intelligence services being involved all the way from Chechnya to Iraq, because you've got, of course, the Russian intelligence services who are engaged in a war against terrorism, and which puts them in touch with terrorists, of course, either as single or double agents, and which opens the possibility of using those terrorists for fake wars on terror, etc. So you see intelligence agencies collaborating internationally with their normal operations right now. So we'd see it as a pretty broad-based approach which has been pursued by these people. But having actually examined the kind of things that are going on, maybe just to give you a flavor of it, the most almost infamous thing that's come out about 9/11 since it happened has been the background of Mohammed Atta down in Florida, as revealed by Daniel Hopsicker. His girlfriend, Amanda Keller, it turns out, didn't really fit the profile of the girlfriend of a fundamentalist Muslim, because Hopsicker describes her, he implies charitably, as a lingerie model, and she describes the coke which Mohammed Atta had access to, and the fact they were continually stoned, and they had piles of money, etc. It's a scandalous tale, and it certainly doesn't fit the profile of some kind of Muslim terrorist, does it?
And some of that audio is available on breakfornews.com, right? Of
That's
Amanda
right.
Keller?
Yeah, of Amanda Keller. In interviews she's given at an undisclosed location to Daniel Hopsicker, describing Mohammed's background, the kind of people he hung out with, and his connections, what looks like, to drug trafficking, to cocaine, to plenty of money.
It all seems surreal.
It's I don't know what you've got there in Montreal, but they got the National Enquirer down in the States there.
That's right.
Or you've got Weekly World News.
Weekly World News, or,
I think it would be, well, no, it's not way out enough for Weekly World News, but it's certainly National Enquirer level. It's I Snorted Coke with Mohammed.
Yeah.
You know, terrorist girlfriend tells all. And what we feel is this is part of a plan to tabloidize the whole issue of those who question what went on in events.
To isolate the people.
To turn it into almost a caricature of itself.
Right.
And stepping back from that, we believe that we can't be naive here, Joe. We can't be naive. Are we to believe that the people in the autocratic authoritarian power structures, which have dominated all of the last century, knowing the internet was coming, knowing the free expression which it would allow, simply sat back and said, oh, well, that's the way it goes, I suppose. Eventually free speech gets out of the box and there's nothing you can do about it. Or did they determine that this would be allowed to go forward, but they would apply the same techniques to the internet as they did to the mainstream? In other words, they'd buy all the big publishing points.
Total control.
That in the mainstream. Yeah, so you control wherever it is that there's large traffic, big sites which command a lot of attention on the internet, you own them, just like you did in the mainstream media where you buy up all the big newspapers and all the big media operations, and that leaves you in effective control. And the investment required in the internet was relatively modest in the early days of the internet. In order to achieve that kind of control, you didn't have to put an awful lot of money in to get in early. And so in the early stages of the internet, we saw the emergence of shows in the United States like Coast to Coast AM, featuring paranormal, supernatural,
right,
esoteric and alien issues, etc., etc. And we saw Jeff Rentz and the huge popularity he had. And indeed, it was on, in particular, let's say, Rentz.com, that the so-called conspiracy theorists found the first large publishing outlet for their theories. Who else was going to publish them? What if Rentz had no problem publishing that material? And I believe that's because with the paranormal and aliens and Face on Mars and all of that environment which surrounded these sites, it totally suited the establishment to allow conspiracy material to come out in that environment. It set the tone. And that setting the tone of conspiracy, it's almost a joke now, conspiracy theories on the internet. Well, of course it is, because they've invested a lot of money making sure it's a joke.
And the look of the site itself, we're talking about a very large operation. He gets a lot of visitors, and if you take a look at Rentz.com, it's almost made to look crazy and unprofessional.
Yes. And what discussion about these kind of issues could be complete without referring to Alex Jones, the king of the conspiracy theorists?
That's Alex Jones from Prison Planet, that TV, I believe.
Yes, and Infowars.com and Police State 1, Police State 2, etc., etc. Much of the material he's talking about there, it's intersecting with what we've discussed here today, but I'm discussing it in a socio-political context of an ideological battle between the left and the right in terms of where society goes, whereas Alex Jones is discussing it in terms of a plan for a complete world takeover. The concentration camps are waiting already, folks. Any day now they're going to push the button and impose a global fascist military state. We'll all be getting retinal scans, etc. Yes, it's true, these people love security, but is it really doing ourselves any favors to be taking this hysterical kind of an approach? I believe no, it's not. I believe once again that he serves the number of left-wing people I know who are totally turned off any discussion of these issues because of their experience of the kind of material put out by the likes of Alex Jones is legion. And I believe it has been very effective to, once again, sensationalize and tabloidize what are effectively very sort of grassroots political issues.
He had a big story with the London bombings that he came out with saying that there were drills going on that day. Tell me a little bit about that and what you discovered.
Yes, there were drills going on that day. We know that because Peter Power of Visor Consultants was running those drills, and he spoke about it on BBC. He spoke about it on a number of TV stations, actually. And that was immediately seized upon. The words of Peter Power were that he was running a drill on the day for a company of 1,000 people. And Alex Jones seized upon that and said that there were 1,000 people out in the London Underground on that day in this corporate terror drill, which served as an ideal cover for the actual attacks, because anybody intercepted who was engaged in planting bombs or something could just say, oh, I'm with the terror drill, and it was a great cover. Now, when Visor Consultants Peter Power there said I was out there running a terror drill for a company of 1,000 people, he meant for a company of 1,000 people, not a terror drill with 1,000 people. The company had 1,000 people as its employees, and
employees.
I was running it for 7 or 8 managers in an office where we were running a paper exercise. No field staff, nobody out there poking around the London Underground, just the usual corporate security. Security consultants get paid vast amounts of money for these corporate security and risk responsiveness, et cetera, seminars which they hold for managers.
But this works perfect for the 9/11 conspiracy theory that Cheney was running drills in New York. So that if that gets discredited, then perhaps this whole idea that Cheney was behind the 9/11 attacks gets discredited also, right?
Well, yeah, it certainly did. It reflects badly on everybody who's talked about terror drills previously, and it has been a focus of the 9/11 researchers, the coincident terror drills on 9/11. So even without getting into the deep ramifications of it, there was a follow-up article, predictably, by the Channel 4 television station in the UK, which did interview Peter Power, found out that there were, as we published early on, just a handful of people involved in that paper drill in an office. And so it discredited Jones, and it discredited everybody who questions the mainstream line. And I believe that these people have been doing that kind of shoddy work, which hasn't benefited those who are putting real questions. And if I take it, going back to the Operation Gladio that I was speaking of earlier, which did run, was a real operation, and which political activism and journalistic investigation eventually managed to bring to light, well, we can't get those kinds of sort of very basic political and investigative advances in the current climate, because nobody takes you seriously, because anybody who would question a modern Operation Gladio is no longer seen in the normal political context, in a left-wing context, questioning what's going on, but is seen in a conspiracy theory context, which they've carefully created, and I'm saying they've invested vast resources. And it will look reasonably good on the surface. It's when you scratch below that you find out that it's been leading you around in circles.
And it certainly plays off people's anxiety and fears.
It does, yeah. I did actually guest on Alexis Jones' show once, and a person was speaking on the phone and was quite fearful. You know, as many people end up being if they're tuning into that show on a regular basis, is fearful. And I was being very optimistic. And, you know, really, that's my take on it all, is not we're moments away from disaster, but we've got a political and social problem here that we need to deal with calmly and coolly and rationally. And nobody's about to pull a militaristic fascist state on us, because that would actually inspire real opposition. This is much more like slowly cooking the frog so he doesn't notice.
And putting a lot of money in your pocket.
As you do it along the way, yeah. But always raising the temperature very, very slightly, degree by degree, and never inciting people to actually fundamentally politically respond to you. So it's a slow war of attrition, and I'm not expecting the secret police to come kicking our doors down in the morning, because that would give them a real problem. We would react to that. But the threat of it is pretty good at just putting people off and slowly wearing down the left.
Okay, I want to thank Mr. Fenton Dunn from breakfornews.com and wagnews.blogspot.com. Thanks for joining us today. It's been interesting talking to you, and I hope that some of our listeners will visit your site and learn more about some of the things that are going on actually behind the news. And thank you again, Mr. Dunn, for joining us today.
Okay, and it's great to talk to you, and you Canadians, keep it up.
Thank you very much.
You're right there on the Empire's doorstep.
We are, and you know, it's kind of scary to be on top looking down, but
okay. No worries. We do this nice and calm. I'm sure we'll all achieve the political results we want.
Let's hope so. Thanks, Joe. Have a good day.